Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello and welcome to this episode number 134 of the Free Cities Podcast. Brought to you, as always, by our most excellent sponsor, Veritas Village. They're building an off-grid village for freedom lovers in Panama, energy self-sufficient luxury homes, and it's in the process of being built right now, and you can own a wonderful off-plan property there. Close to the beaches and amenities, but in a slightly elevated location. So it has a perfect climate for growing your own food. Every house comes with its own solar system included and wind if necessary. Energy independence in a modern luxury lifestyle. Get in touch with them to go and see the project and look at the houses currently being built. If you'd like to know more about their ethos and projects, click on the link in the show notes, www.ecovillages.life/freecities, all one word, for more info. There's also an interview I did with Patrick, their founder, at last year's Free Cities Conference on that link. That'll give you a sense of who they are and whether you want to do business with them. Okay, on to today's show. And it's another dispatch from the wonderful state of New Hampshire in the USA. It's an interview I did with a liberty-minded lady. Talking of liberty-minded ladies, I do get comments saying that you don't interview enough ladies. Well, I don't know whether you've noticed, but three of the last four episodes have all been with women. I'm trying, but guess what? Do you know what our gender demographics are for listeners? Probably won't surprise you. I'm looking at them now. 1.3% of you are non-binary. Hello, non-binary people. Nice to have you here. 2.4% of you didn't specify your gender, so you may also be non-binary. We'll never know. But hello to you too. Okay, females. Well, you make up, wait for it, 12% of our listenership. Yes, that's right, ladies. 12%, making the gents 84.3% of our listeners. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not worried that we have so many men listening. I understand it. I get it. I'm a man. I'm also a Bitcoiner. I see a very similar pattern in the Bitcoin community and in the Free Cities community. Look, I love this stuff. Free cities, liberty, inverted commas, dangerous ideas. My other half, though, well, not so interested. She certainly believes the same things as me. She's just not concerned about speaking about it incessantly for hours and hours each week and trying to change the world. Anyway, today's lady, well, she's very much concerned with changing the world. Melissa Cream is a New Yorker who moved to New Hampshire before the Free State Project made it their homeland. She's a founding member of the Women's Defense League and the current chair of the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance. She's also an NRA instructor. That's the National Rifle Association, for the non-Americans amongst you. I should mention, thank you, Melissa, for taking me to Wilson Hill Pistol Club, a beautiful place in New Hampshire, to see what that's all about. As they say, yes, of course, we fired off some guns. She's also an excellent person to have a chin wag with, as we say here in the British Isles. A quick AI dissection of our discussion. The conversation delves into the dynamics of the Free State Project, the challenges of local governance, and the importance of grassroots activism in promoting freedom. Melissa shares her insights into the role of the NHLA in monitoring legislation and advocating for pro-liberty bills. In other words, and this, once again, AI is making this sound like an incredibly boring conversation, even though it's not. The NHLA are into naming and shaming politicians who don't vote pro-liberty, which is a really great initiative that appears to be working. Okay, onward as they discuss the cultural differences between New Hampshire and other states in the US. They touch upon the impact of COVID-19 on local businesses and the ongoing struggle for personal freedom. The dialogue also addresses the complexities of gun rights and the societal implications of individual liberty versus government control. I love this chat. I think it's a great chat. Very relaxing and informative. Mind you, something I noticed when I was listening back to it just now. I didn't explain the House of Lords versus the House of Commons set up in the UK very well. To confirm, the Commons are elected and they include our Prime Minister, whilst the Lords are unelected, but as I said, they're not all hereditary, but they are appointed by themselves, by the House of Lords. So I was kind of almost right. In practice, in the UK, bills are introduced into the Commons or the Lords, and both houses can play ping pong with a bill until they agree on something. However, if they can't agree, the Commons has more power and can override the Lords. Apparently. And yes, as we spoke about, the US system of the Senate and the House of Representatives was inspired by the British system, but it was deliberately designed differently so that both chambers are elected, which is different to the UK system, and they have equal power. Although each house represents a different section of the population, e.g. individual districts versus the whole state, which is the Senate. That's what it's concerned about. Anyway, that's enough of that little info nugget. You'll get the gist in the conversation later. I like to get these things straight in my mind, you know. Right, Strategic Bitcoin Reserve, Nosta, thank you for the sats. At Nick, at Clear or Clay, at Justin Bianchi, at Kristen, at Eclair, and a few comments. Eclair says, I forgot all about Ian Freeman's 8-year sentence. A stain on the justice system during the previous administration that should be reversed by the current administration. In my opinion, the unnecessary use of force in the arrest, the miscarriage of justice, and the chicanery used to convict political opposition. I think that means it was unnecessary. Yes, agreed with all of those things. And in fact, I did have a private message from someone about that episode. That's the Bonnie Freeman episode, asking where they could find a link to the video that I talked about, which was the arrest using completely unnecessary force. And it wasn't in the show notes, so I've popped it in the show notes now. So if that's something you're interested in watching, check out the show notes of that episode, the Bonnie Freeman episode. Justin says about the Liam Martin episode last week, 100%. That's all it needs. Another comment from Eclair, or Eclair. This is a comment and show of appreciation of the human nattering. Thank you. Keep talking with interesting people. I will. And that was the Liam Martin episode again. Thank you all for gifting us the hardest money known to man and woman. Don't forget, time for the conversation. Coming at you this week from a tropical beach in New Hampshire. Yes, that's right. I'm not lying. So maybe you should go and grab your favourite deck chair and parasol. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Melissa Cream. Good God. That was... I didn't expect to be that warm.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I probably should have warned you about that.
We're in the tropics here, aren't we? Considering right. It's... Well, it must be minus... It's minus a few outside.
It's minus a few outside. This is Sky Venture in Nashua, New Hampshire. And this is one of my favorite places in February, March, January in New Hampshire because they do. They keep it around 80 degrees out there. This room is cooled. They have the party room, but you can surf here. You can skydive here. And I will come and just hang out here to get a bit of 80 degrees in February.
I can see palm trees. There's a guy climbing there. Uh-huh. There's people surfing down there, and there is people skydiving there, which is, yeah, I didn't expect that in New Hampshire. Yep. Well, thanks for inviting me here anyway.
Well, I'm glad you came. I'm excited. It's not my place. I know the owners very well, and it is one of the most exciting spots in Nashua for sure.
Are they Free Stater friends, or is that how it works around here?
They are not Free Stater friends, actually. Mm. They are, we kind of met them randomly. My husband and I run a group called Nashua Liberty. And we just meet up on Sunday nights, 6 o'clock, and talk about anything from, you know, what's going on at the New Hampshire State House to permaculture to Marvel movies, whatever. And the location varies where Nashua Liberty meets up. And one night, my husband's like, why don't we go to Oasis Cafe at Sky Venture? And I'm normally, no, nothing
is
new.
Is that one down there?
Yes.
It's like being on a tropical beach, isn't
yes.
it? Which is bizarre.
So we came, and we were down there. We had a group of probably 10 of us, and we were there, and Lori comes over, and she's like, what is this group? Who are you guys? And we said, we're Nashua Liberty. And she said, are you guys Free Staters? And I said, well, some of us are, some of us aren't, but we're just a group of liberty-minded people who get together and have dinner. And she said, well, I'm on board with Liberty. And she basically said, free samples. And she's like, I have a gun I'd like to show you. And we just hit it off. And so we, you know, started coming here about once a month for our Nashua Liberty meetups. And then COVID hit. She's had a hard time getting staffing for the cafe ever since. So it's been hard to get here on a regular basis with that group. But we do come here.
That's interesting. That whole... people struggling to get staff since COVID thing. It's a bit of a mystery to me. Do you know exactly what the dynamics of that is? Is it really just people getting used to doing nothing and going, do you know what? I'm not going to work for whatever, minimum
maybe,
wage.
Maybe. I don't know what the nature of the problem is. Honestly, I have no idea. It would seem to me, I just said to my husband, I think I want to work at that cafe. I think it would be really fun. I like to
grass
be warm.
Skirt on. Well, over that side where the surfboards are, it's actually like a Hawaii backdrop,
yes.
isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah. Well, and she's spent some time in Hawaii. She's originally from New Hampshire. She spent some time in Hawaii, and she wanted to bring Hawaii here. So that is all purposeful.
It's working.
Yep.
Yeah. There's been a very strange thing that people suddenly deciding they're not prepared to work for like minimum wage.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have happened when I was a kid. We couldn't wait to get out there and work.
Me too. But I was excited to have my own money. Yeah. I can do what I want with this. Yeah, that was great.
Youth of today. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's probably, I'm simplifying it, obviously.
Right.
But
I think it depends on the youth. Again, it comes down to individuality. And I think everybody's different. And there are youth of today that are industrious and working hard to, you know, make rent or whatever it is. And then there's others that are not.
What I just found interesting about what you said then was that Free Staters and liberty-minded people aren't necessarily the same thing, mm-hmm. which I've come to understand on this trip, actually, that it's very much, I always thought if you were a liberty-minded, you were a libertarian, but that's not the case, right?
No, I'm not a Free Stater. I'll be completely clear. I'm not. My husband and I moved here in 1992 before the Free State Project. But I would say we're both liberty-minded, right? And we have a principled liberty position on what liberty is. We're anti-force, non-aggression principle. So the libertarian ideals line up very well with myself and my family.
So when you say you're not a Free Stater, is that the political side of the Free Staters? Because Free Staters, for me, are people that just, you know, live and let live people.
Free Staters, to me, I guess I'm more of a, I don't know what to say, like they signed a pledge to move here. So to me, a Free Stater is someone who signed that pledge that said that they would move here within 5 years to advance liberty in New Hampshire. So if you signed that pledge and you have moved here, or even if you just signed the pledge, that makes you a Free Stater in my opinion. Now, they've kind of redefined the definition in the Free State Project, and they are kind of taking it and saying, they've named myself and my husband as honorary Free Staters. They're like, because we've done so much for liberty in New Hampshire, you guys are Free Staters. Of course you're Free Staters. And so they've opened up that definition to people who are looking to advance liberty in the state of New Hampshire. But for me, I kind of look at it as, well, I never signed that pledge. I was already here. So to me, the Free Staters are those that signed the pledge.
Did you notice it happening in the beginning then? Were you aware of it when it started, or is that?
My husband was. My husband voted for New Hampshire to be the Free State. He was part of that vote. I was not. I had no idea. And I became aware of it, I think, years later when I started meeting through our Nashua Liberty Group Free Staters. And then that's when I kind of found out. I don't know what timeline that was, when that was.
So, I mean, you were behind the idea. I know that I've spoken to some people, and it's quite obvious that the notion that a group of people are kind of coming here to take over is actually not the best way to sell yourself to a new host state. And I can imagine it, you know, where I live in the UK is very, I live on a remote farm, basically. And anyone who moves into the area, well, everyone wants to know who it is, obviously. And if someone came in and said, well, we're going to come here and we're going to, you know, we'd be very suspicious of them,
even if
it was liberty, even if it was a libertarian thing, you know.
Well, I mean, New Hampshire kind of, to me, is the right spot for it. Their motto is live free or die.
Yes.
So the most welcoming state has to be New Hampshire, live free or die. I mean, you can look at New York, the Empire State. I think not. So to me, native New Hampshire people tend to be welcoming. Certainly there's those that are not, but
how come New Hampshire and New York, which are you're not too far away, mm-hmm. but they're the polar opposites? How did that happen?
I have no idea. I'm not from way back, right? I'm from back far enough, but not that far back. I suspect it has to do with the way their state houses were set up. I'm originally from New York. The New Hampshire State House is set up in such a way that the people who set it up have made it very transparent. Our state reps still don't get paid like thousands and thousands of dollars. They make $200 biennium. So our state reps, our senators, they're not making $100,000 a year. It's a very almost volunteer state house, if you will. New York State, that's not the way it is. That's their, you know, and I think it allows for corruption, right?
But I mean, historically, it's not like New Hampshire is more remote than New York. Because what quite often happens is the freedom lovers move away and try and find their own place on their own. That's what I'm, if you look at the UK, the hilly parts of Wales and Scotland are where the British never really kind of took a stronghold. And that's because it's just like farther away from London and up in the hills kind of thing. But when you arrive in America, or when you arrived here, I suppose the whole place was pretty wild, right?
No, Nashua was still a city. I live in Nashua. Back in the day.
Yeah,
I'm sure it was. And I mean, even in New York State, right? Northern New York, which is where I'm from, is very different than the city, New York City and its surrounding towns.
That's probably it, isn't it? New York had a strategic advantage and therefore grew, mm-hmm. because Manchester, which is the capital of here, is a lovely, it's almost like a little town, mm-hmm. right? You'd call it a city, right?
We call it a city. It's the Queen City. I think the reason it's a Queen City is because population-wise, it's larger than our state city or the capital, Concord. So it's a Queen City, but I mean, compared to New York City, right? It's not even close.
No, you can drive into the middle and park your car really mm-hmm. easily, which I mm-hmm. did the other day. So you're an honorary Free Stater, which is, I don't know, it's not too bad, I suppose. It's better than being not allowed in, I suppose.
Right. I'm proud of it. I'm very proud of it.
And is that anything to do with your work at the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance, or is that just, I noticed you've spoken at Porkfest a few times and things like that. So you've obviously speaking to people in the movement.
Right. So I think my honorary Free State title came before any of this. I was always volunteering with different things that are pro-liberty. And so I think that kind of came before. I don't know if they ever, you know, there's no actual bestowing of a title on anyone here. You know, it's not that way. So, and then I just kind of, it's a journey. I think we're all on our own journeys. And my journey has taken me to where I am now, you know, with NHLA. I'm the chairperson of this organization called NHLA, which is the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance. And that's part of my journey. It's just.
And did you move up here from New York State for any reason?
My husband got a job here.
Right. So there was no underlying reason other than that.
I mean, we loved Live Free or Die. That was, oh, hey, that's a great motto. But no, just he got a job and we ended up here.
That was quite lucky. Mm-hmm. Before we go into the NH Liberty Alliance, I got a question that I've started asking everyone I've been interviewing here. And that is, when you leave this state, does it feel different? Do you find other states different? Like generally, people in the street, people that you meet in the shops, people that you don't speak to you, I don't know. But it's interesting because, you know, well, let's hear your answer first and then I'll tell you what everyone else said.
Absolutely, I do.
Right, that's what everyone else has said.
Absolutely, I do. And I will tell you, when my children were young, when we would travel out of state by car, we would leave, you know, the state, drive to wherever, and be on our way back home. And as soon as we entered the state of New Hampshire, Happy Point was our, you know, it would, the signs are there, welcome to New Hampshire. And we would all, Happy Point. And you could feel this, like, lessening on your shoulders, you felt freer. I felt freer as soon as I crossed into that border, as soon as I got to my safe zone of New Hampshire.
And is there anything legitimate behind that, in as much as, is it like when you meet a policeman in New Hampshire, are they less or more aggressive or more understanding or what? You
know? So I don't have that much interaction with police officers.
Or something.
But I would say yes, right? I've been pulled over in both states. I would say the tension in New Hampshire is less for me. I've been pulled over and most of the times I'm just given a warning. In the same in New York, but they just seem a little ready for something to happen, you know. In New Hampshire, they are more friendly. I mean, I can tell you the story about what happened here during COVID at this very place. Somebody came in, they weren't using masks. She complained, the police were called, the police came and said to the owner, this is your business, you don't have to have the masks. They were very nice about it. And that was the Nashua police. So, you know, it is.
And was
different.
That a, I mean, what would the, so in other states, were there mandated masks to be worn even inside private businesses?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was, here it was the town of Nashua was requiring it. They wanted you to wear masks, but the city police didn't necessarily enforce that rule.
Interesting. That sounds very positive. And I suppose, you know, if you going back to the Free State Project idea, it's to have people who liberty-minded people working in all walks of life. So,
right.
But by the sounds of it, there were already people here who thought this way.
That's my feeling. And I'm not saying a different police officer wouldn't have done a different thing in the same circumstance here in Nashua, but that was the experience here. It's different. You cross into this border and you just feel better.
And it's, so your advice to any American looking for freedom would be New Hampshire, right? Across the board.
If you're looking for liberty in all the ways, New Hampshire is your place. If you're just looking for medical freedom, but you're anti-gun, don't come to New Hampshire. You know, I'm for all the liberties. If you're only for one liberty, if you're only involved in one thing and you have one passion, maybe find a different place. But if you're for all of it, if you want to live and let live, this is your spot.
Medical freedom, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Like what? That needs explaining to me.
So we had a bunch of people wanting to move here because they wanted medical freedom, and you know they didn't want to have to get the vax or whatever it may be, and so that they thought New Hampshire was the place to be, and that's their one issue is don't make me get vaccinated, and New Hampshire's on the fighting for that, and so they moved here. But I'm like, well, there's other liberties here. There was a couple that moved here for medical freedom. And then the first time they saw somebody open carrying a firearm, they were like, whoa, 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 whoa. We came here from New York. We're not used to that. They got used to it, but it's just kind of know where you're coming, you know?
Am I right in saying that New Hampshire has the most guns and the least gun crime? Is this correct?
I believe that's true, yes.
Interesting. So, yes. I mean, in many ways, it proves the thesis that, you know,
well, we're willing.
Bearing in mind, I'm a European. I've never even seen a gun in real life, apart from my air rifle that I have at home, you know. But that is the argument, I take it, one of the arguments at least, you know.
Well, you keep the criminals guessing, right? So if they know that everyone is unarmed, they know they have a pool of potential victims. Where if they have to guess who's armed, then it's a little dicier for them. It makes their job a little bit harder. What I do say is, you know, the criminals make all the choices. They get all of them. They get to choose who, where, when, how, whether or not they're going to use some sort of a weapon. And all you're left with is, will you defend yourself? And if so, how? And if your government takes away your choices in how to defend yourself, that's kind of a problem. That's, you know.
I suppose as well, the other thing, as a woman, it's the great leveler, the gun, isn't it? Is that a big issue for women in general?
For sure, certainly. So I am, full disclosure, I'm an NRA instructor. I'm a founding member of a group in New Hampshire called the Women's Defense League. And yes, women, you know, we're smaller typically. It's a leveler. It's definitely something.
I wonder what the statistics are for how that plays out in real life. Because it's one thing to own a gun, but it's another thing to use it. And it would be interesting to see whether women are more or less likely to use it in that situation.
So studies have shown they're more likely to use it.
Really?
Yes. This is from studies a long time ago that I read, and I don't remember the exact studies. I don't have my sources, but they showed, I think it was an FBI thing that said a woman is more likely, because a man will feel that he can physically defend himself against another man. A woman already knows we lose. So she is more likely to pull the trigger in a self-defense situation.
Hmm. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those issues that we just don't have that issue back home. We just don't have guns. Even the police don't really have guns. But I like talking about it.
Yeah. Do you have no crime? Does nobody ever get mugged?
No, exactly.
Or, you know, no women ever get raped? No, you know, that never happens, right?
I think the way most Europeans would look at it is that, like, the arguments to own a gun here are good. I see that. They work. They make sense to me. But by having so many guns, the chances of something happening, which, you know, like just accidental death by gun, or just the chance of actually going to your gun to use lethal force is higher. So more people die. Now, it's obvious that you can't change that. The arms race has begun and it's here. So you're never going to change that. The only way you could change that would be to try and take people's guns away, which doesn't work. Because some people are going to keep them, and probably the bad guys are going to definitely still get them. So it doesn't work. But as an English person, when I think about it, I'm happy that we don't have guns as well. But then again, nobody in the UK would ever wonder that they might want to defend themselves against their own government, which is an idea that's quite prevalent here, but probably not even talked about back at home. It's not okay. Something anyone thinks about, you know.
Interesting. Yeah.
But yeah, the argument holds true, I think. But it'd be interesting, given the choice, if you could have a clean slate and start again, would you still go for gun ownership?
Like, oh yeah.
100%.
Yes. Yes. I enjoy my gun ownership. I target practice, which is fun. It's a fun sport. It's a fun hobby. And I do find it calms me. Honestly, when I'm carrying a firearm, I feel safer because I have an option. I have a choice that you may or may not know about to defend myself. So, you know, this is another story. Years ago, my husband and I were walking to a restaurant, and we were both carrying our firearms. And this man approached us aggressively. He was coming at us. And the two of us just both started laughing because we both knew, like, dude, this is not... your fight. You don't want to start this. And our laughing so disarmed him. He was not expecting that reaction. And so from that, nothing happened. He kind of went away. He just turned around and was like, what the heck? You guys were supposed to get aggressive. And had we been unarmed, had we been, you know, we might have been inclined to be like, uh-oh, we've got to be more aggressive than him and escalate something. Whereas we just both laughed and it kind of de-escalated everything.
I suppose the problem would have been if he'd have come at you with a gun, I suppose. But, you know,
right.
That's, I would imagine that's less likely. What was I going to say then? Oh, I just thought of something really important to say. I'll come back to it. I just got sidetracked. Let's talk about what happens at the NHLA, the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance, because I find that very interesting. And before you explain what goes on there, is this the only state in the country where something like this happens?
It was.
Ah.
It was. But now we have the Liberty Whip in Tennessee has started. It's a new organization very similar to NHLA. And one of the founding members is our former political director. He moved to Tennessee and he has started the Liberty Whip in Tennessee. So prior to last year, I think, we were the only one, but we're catching.
And let me try and sum it up and you can tell me if I got the right gist of it. You basically have people that monitor all the bills that are new bills that are arising and hoping to be voted on. And you kind of score them on values around liberty. And then you release all that information so that the people who are voting on those things can make the choice. Even if they don't read the bill thoroughly, you are reading the bills thoroughly. And that way, people trust you to put the right thing, the right ideas across. And as a result, more and more liberty bills get passed.
Correct. That's a good synopsis.
Good.
Yes.
But I'm surprised. Do other parties do it? Like, is there a Republican one in Texas or something where the same kind of thing happens?
So I'm aware in New Hampshire. So we put out this document called the Gold Standard. I have one here. We put out, you know, this document called the Gold Standard. The Republican Party in New Hampshire puts out the Pink Sheet, I think they call it. I'm not even sure what it's called, but they, you know, it's following the Republican platform. The Democrats probably have one too, probably the Blue Sheet. I'm not as aware of them. But yes, other places are putting out, or other organizations, political parties are putting out how they want their R's, D's, L's to vote.
And do the representatives that read it, are they all libertarians, or can any? Do you find that other people read it and they're it just? I don't know. Even a Democrat, one of the Democratic representatives might read it.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, that we email it to all of them. Every single one gets the Gold Standard in their email. We have volunteers at the State House who hand out physical copies to all of them. Now, some of them will take it, and some of them vote it 100% of the time. Some will not. I think some on the other side who are anti-liberty will take it to vote the opposite, we say.
Who's anti-liberty? That seems like a strange...
Anti-liberty, people who are voting against liberty, right?
Yeah, what's the reasoning to do that? What would give me an example of why?
I think they think it'll make everything safer, right? Like I picture them as nannies that want to make sure that no one's ever going to get hurt, and there's going to be, you know, money for everybody all the time, and if we take it out of your pocket and we're giving it to the children, that makes it okay. And so that's how I, you know, it was your money, you earned it, but we need it for this. That's how I kind of picture them. They think their hearts may be kind of in the right place, where they think they're coming from a good place, but what they don't realize is that when you rob Peter to pay Paul, Peter starts to get pissed off after a while. And when you're paying Paul and the money doesn't necessarily go to Paul, it gets really mucked up.
And is it right that you have something called a liberty rating?
Yes.
Is it just a number? So if I see a bill proposed, is there like 7.8 on the liberty scale or something?
So the way it works, we are evaluating, there's about 1,000 bills that go through the State House every year. NHLA will review most of them. There's a lot that don't matter. Changing the name of a bridge is not liberty or anti-liberty. You're just changing the name of a bridge. So we evaluate all of those bills. We rate them, are they pro-liberty, anti-liberty, or neutral? We send out that gold standard. After we send out the gold standard, we watch how the reps vote on those bills. And the bills are weighted. Some bills count more than others. And so then we watch how they vote. And we score our representatives on how they voted. Did they vote with the gold standard or against it most of the time? How did they do? And they get a rating from A plus.
Oh, right. You're rating the representatives, not the bills.
Not the bills. The bills are rated, but they're rated as to what they are. Are they pro-liberty or anti-liberty?
Is that just a yes or a no on the bills?
So we have a bill review system. The bill review system is about 30 questions, and it's a very simple system. You do go through a training class to learn how to use our system. And it's, you know, is this bill, what do you think? Is the bill, as you read this bill, a bill reviewer will be asked, is it liberty, anti-liberty, neutral? You score, that's a score. Is it constitutional or anti-constitutional? That's a score. Is it increasing the tax burden, decreasing the tax burden, neutral? So you go through a bunch about 30 questions. And when that's all done, the program creates a score of, I think it's 30 points if it's really a pro-liberty bill and minus 30 if it's really anti-liberty. And that's how we're deriving the score of the bill. And then we have a research director. Our research director determines whether or not these bills end up on that document called the gold standard. So the bill reviewers do it. They do the triaging of these bills. Then we have a master bill review team. So you, as a bill reviewer, would do your bill review. The master bill reviewers are going to look it over and go, did Timothy get this right? Okay, yes or no.
And so naming and shaming. Yeah. I love it.
And if you got it right, the research director makes a determination as to, okay, is this bill important enough to land on our gold standard? And if it is, then it goes on the gold standard with a recommendation, vote with liberty. And then we watch how the reps vote, and the reps are the ones who are getting those scores, A plus, all the way down to what we call a CT, which is a constitutional threat.
Really?
Yes.
How many CTs have you got in New Hampshire at the moment?
Too many.
Really? A lot?
What I'm seeing right now, what we've been seeing, is kind of this divide, if you will, where like we have a lot more pro-liberty reps, but we're also getting the anti-liberty reps. And it's kind of this split. And I think what kind of is going on, and I hope it's not true, but I think it might be true, is that some people, how do I want to put this? They see people going one direction, they're like, I'm going the opposite.
Yeah. Trump derangement syndrome.
A little bit of that, absolutely not, everything is wrong. So they'll take the exact opposite, whether or not they agree. And so there's people who, I don't know if you've been to Disney World, but there are people who love Disney World. And then there are people who won't even go because it's such a cultural thing in America. And they're like, I'm anti-Disney. And I'm like, well, you've never even been. Like, check it out. Nope, can't. It's too much of a popular thing. Like, they want to do the exact opposite. So I do think there's a little bit of that going on in our state house right now.
Is it true then that historically, different sides of the house, as we would call it, voted on the law rather than with their party? I mean, it's always been a little bit like that, hasn't it?
Do they vote with the law rather than their party?
Do they vote for the law, or do they just go with what the party says?
Right. I think everybody's different. Again, you've got different reps in that state house, and they're people, right? And so some of them are, big R's and are going to vote, the pink sheet says this, and that's who I am, and I'm going to vote that way. And others will use their own judgment and vote with what they think is the right thing to do. I mean, I love our reps. We have 98 endorsed legislators right now in the State House in New Hampshire. So what that means is they scored at least a B-plus or better in the State House, and we endorsed them. Because what happens is you get your rating, A-plus is constitutional threat, and then NHLA has three funds, and we will want you to run again, right? We want you to stay in the State House. So we will give you money to run from our PAC fund. We have an operations fund that funds the printing of the gold standard, the website. None of us at NHLA are paid. We're all volunteers. And so the money that we get is going towards these funds. So the operations fund, the PAC, which is to get those reps that we love back in the State House. And then we have a civic action fund because we are trying to help citizens of New Hampshire who need help. So the Civic Action Fund is trying to get them off government assistance, if you will, if possible. It's our smallest fund, and we can run up, if somebody needs $500 because their house was on fire, we will run them $500. We can write a check and send it to them because they need help right away.
How many legislators are there in total then?
400 in our house. I think we're the third largest body in the world, representative body in the world.
And that's just the way it's evolved, right? Because all of the states are different, right?
Every state is different. And there's 24 senators. So we have 400 representatives in the House and 24 senators for a total of 424.
Just for our European listeners, can you explain what a representative is and what a senator is?
So a representative is serving in the House, if you will, of our judicial system. That's what it's called, the House. And a senator serves in the Senate. They're two different sides of our legislative body. And so the bills that we have actually go through both sides. One goes through the House. Well, the bill will go through the House, and sometimes it gets changed or modified or amended, and then it goes over to the Senate, and both sides vote on it.
And the reason that there is... it's evolved that way, would you say?
The reason that's evolved, I have no idea.
I was just thinking about it then. Yeah. It's kind of like a check system.
Right.
If you need competition in your voting, so you've got two different places that vote on something. Do you happen to know, like in the UK, we have the House of Lords and the House of Commons, right?
Okay, I'm not aware. I have no idea what goes on.
It's more insidious than that. Yeah. The House of Lords is in, these are kind of, politicians in inverted commas who inherit their title, they just get it.
Okay, whereas so they're the House, just born into
yes,
it.
Yes, they're born into it. It's a terrible system when you think about it,
but okay.
It goes back in history. The House of Commons are, blue collar, apparently.
The people
who have to kind of get voted in. So, but they both get to vote on things.
Now, are they the same size bodies? Is there like 100?
Don't ask. I'm as interested in politics as... I'm not interested in politics at all, really.
Okay.
I find,
me either, honestly.
Right. I find the whole political thing unnecessary, number one. I think if you break it down, everything political that happens, bar a very small number of things, don't need to be run from in a political way. The private sector can sort most of the problems out, and really local politics is probably the only politics that you really need. Apart from maybe securing your borders around the whole country that you live in. But I think my view of a country like America would be it's probably a bit too big. I think smaller countries are better.
It's a lot. That's why I like the small state of New Hampshire,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
I think smaller states are better, honestly.
Yes, me too. And I think they're easier to run as well. I think the problem with having a federal government in charge of 50 states or whatever it is, is the personality of all the states is different. And why should someone in Washington tell Wyoming what to do?
Right.
There's nothing in common, really, apart from possibly, all right, we'll stop the bad guys attacking us as a whole. But then again, who's going to attack America? It's a ginormous country. You can't really win.
Well, they've tried, right? They have. We've had 9/11, right? Like that happened. So they do come, but
But
ultimately,
but once again, New York State could have dealt with that,
right?
Couldn't they? They could have had a. They could have. I mean, it didn't need the FBI spread very thin around the whole country to not notice that someone wanted to blow up the Twin Towers or whatever it was.
Right.
Who knows what happened? So you've got if you've got 98 B plus or better out of 400, you're about a quarter. Is that fair to say that a quarter of the reps are libertarians then, pretty much, or liberty minded?
I wouldn't say they're libertarians. I would say they're libertarian minded. So we've got, I think it's about 12 to 14 who are what I call my A plus reps. They voted with my gold standard 100% of the time. They submitted pro-liberty bills through the state house. And what happens, though, is when we have these I would call them pro-liberty reps. They're not all necessarily libertarians. But what happens is they have such an influence in the state house. So when people are leaning towards voting not with us, they have such pull to say, no, let me teach you, let me show you, and so they can pull votes over to our side. And so we have had a big say in what goes on in the state house. The reps want to talk to us. They ask us, how can we amend this bill to make you guys like it so that we can get this through? We want it passed. How can NHLA help us? We've had multiple conversations over the years with reps to do that. And they get upset if we won't support their bills. I get emails, what do you mean you're not supporting my bill? And we have to have the discussion of, well, I understand that you don't like EVs and you want them all banned, but that's not liberty.
What about, how long has the NHLA been going?
So that's interesting. It started in 2003, the same time as the Free State Project, but we are not related at all. The Free State Project is completely separate from NHLA. They started in the same year, and it was started by native New Hampshire people.
Right. So nearly 15 years. Have you noticed that the number of legislators who are B-plus or more has increased in that time?
I would say, yeah, it has. Over the years, it's slowly increased. Right now, during my term as chair, it's kind of been about the same. It hasn't really grown past this 100 mark, right? Like, I'd love to get it to 200. That's the goal, is to have more than 200. So I'm not quite sure why that is, but I'd say for the last 4 years, it's been pretty steady at about 100 reps.
And do you have any Democratic reps? I mean, are reps are political, right? Representatives
Correct.
Are political, aren't
right.
they? They have to.
Yep.
Do they have to announce?
They do in New Hampshire. Right. Yeah, they have to declare, am I a Republican or am I a Democrat? They can run as Libertarian. They don't typically win as Libertarians, so they run typically if they'll run as a Republican to win, even though they're Libertarian. We have had Democratic reps who were Libertarian run. And they get ousted pretty quickly. The Democrats will call them out and they get rid of them very quickly. But we have had a couple that have been in there.
What about Democrats who are B pluses?
Like, there's actual,
none.
Zero.
What's that all about then? So,
but, so my
I have to call things like this out because I thought the Democrats, like I thought the lefties were all about freedom.
In New Hampshire, the Libertarian people, some people from that party, had a little bit of say in the Republican platform when it was written. So it's easier for Republicans to be more Libertarian because the Libertarians had a say in writing their GOP platform. The Democrats don't have that. So.
Yeah.
And I'd love to get him on the other side. I don't know how we infiltrate that, but that's what needs to happen.
Well, it's, I mean, you need to, don't, I mean, it's about ideas, really. I mean, if you believe that the government should be in charge of everything and bigger, you're not libertarian. You're not a liberty-minded. And if the Democratic Party, I suppose that is their stance. They like to think they can solve everything, don't they, themselves, the party. You know?
They think that the government can solve everything for them. And I do think that I think it does come down kind of to some basic things about fear. And living free is scary. It's a scary proposition to think, okay, I'm going to live independently. I'm going to be free. I'm going to have to defend myself. I'm going to have to make my own decisions for my economic status, and I'm going to have to figure things out on my own. Now, granted, you can have a tribe of people that help you, which is what, to me, libertarianism is our community. But I think the other side wants the government to keep us safe. They'll keep us safe. They're going to keep us fed. They're going to keep us warm. And, you know, what's the saying, you know, liberty for security, right? Like, you'll have neither. If you're willing to trade your liberty for some security, you're going to end up with neither. And I truly believe that. And I'm not saying you're going to be totally safe if you're free. That's certainly not the case. It's a scary proposition. So I think we have to make liberty, show how safe liberty can be when you're in a community of people that are liberty-minded. And we have to be good neighbors to one another. I think that that's huge.
Have you ever heard someone from the left side of the aisle put the case for against liberty well? Like, have you heard it and appreciated it, let's say?
Like, no.
Like, I mean, like what you've just said to me, it makes sense to me. And I could understand that if I felt, I mean, in many ways, like economically, if I felt pretty uncompetitive in the market, then my inclination would be, well, look, I'll let these guys sort
I'll take
it
my
out.
Check from the government.
Right, exactly,
right?
That kind of thing. And the same with, you know, protection, safety, all these things. If you're less able to protect yourself, or if you just don't want the hassle, then it does seem to make sense. So, I mean, I'm trying to make it make sense. That's what I'm saying. I'm not necessarily going to agree with it, but it's like, yeah, okay, that does make sense. But has anyone ever explained it to you like that from who from that side of the aisle?
I don't think so.
Well, how do they explain it then?
Like? I mean, I think it, I don't know that they do explain it. I don't really hang out with those people, quite frankly. I don't. You know, my community has been, you know, a bunch of libertarians and anarchists.
Fair enough.
And I mean, I see them. And I just kind of, over the years, I've had people in my family who, you know, they want safety, but they don't want to own a gun. So they think the police can get there in time. And, you know, when seconds count, the police are minutes away. And I've tried to point that out, but they would rather, you know, have the guns in the hands of other people, the police. They think that, you know, the police never do anything wrong. Like, I don't, you know, that's their stance. That's okay. And my thought is, fine, you don't have to own a gun. I don't think it's for everyone. But I think if you take away my right to own a gun and everybody else's right to own a gun, now the criminals know no one has them. And the criminals don't follow the law. That's the whole point. So they're going to have them. So to me, you know, it just logically makes more sense. If you don't have one, that's fine. Let the criminals guess that you might.
It reminded me of the question I wanted to ask you earlier. You said you're an NRA instructor. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? What do you do? How do you instruct?
So National Rifle Association is what NRA stands for in the United States. And what it means is I have been certified to teach gun safety to people, to, you know, people who've never held a gun. So if you want to go to the range tomorrow, we can go to the range. I teach them the fundamentals of gun safety and with the Women's Defense League. I'm a volunteer there, and we have a group of women that teach women how to shoot a firearm.
Never actually shot a gun, apart from, you know, a hunt, what you call a shotgun.
Shotgun, rifle.
An air rifle.
Okay.
That's it. I've never actually fired a real gun.
Those are real guns. Those are real guns.
Yeah, they don't really count.
Count. That counts.
Well, a shotgun, I suppose, mm-hmm. does count. But yeah. I suppose you don't go down to a range and shoot a shotgun. You shoot clay pigeons. Or you shoot real pigeons or real animals or whatever. The gun I have, which is an air rifle, is for shooting rabbits out of our vegetable patch and things like that. But I've never actually held a handgun.
A pistol.
No, never had. Not a real one. And never fired it, actually, yeah. It's so what a, just for just my sake only here, and probably a number of Europeans listening to this, what are the top things that you teach safety-wise?
Well, we teach always pointed in a safe direction. Finger off the trigger till you're ready to shoot. I'll be sure of your target and what's beyond it. Those are the three main safety rules. If you follow all of those or even just one.
What was the third one?
Finger off the, always pointed in a safe direction. Finger off the trigger till ready to shoot. Be sure of your target and what's beyond it.
Oh, what's beyond it.
And what's beyond it.
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah. So those are, you know, and then we teach, you know, safety, like what to wear when you're shooting a gun. You know, don't be on any drugs. Don't, you know, drink and go shooting. The basics there. How to store a firearm safely. We teach you stance, you know, shooting position, how to aim it, all the way down.
And
how often
do you go shooting a gun then?
So it varies. I go through stages or phases, if you will. So for sometimes it's like once a month, and then I might go, you know, 6 months without getting to the range. My favorite thing is to take people to the range, and I end up not shooting. I actually took, in December, a state representative to the range. She's a Democrat. She wanted to shoot. I took her to the range, and she said I was the best instructor she'd ever had.
Why did she want to shoot?
She was getting threats.
Oh, right. All of a sudden.
Well, she had done some things I'm not going to discuss here that kind of made people send her some threats. And she's not ready to carry just yet. But she's like, you know, I think I might want to someday have one for self-protection. And so and she's been a pro-gun rep at the State House, even though she's a Democrat. She is pro-gun. So she does vote with us on those kinds of things. I think her rating is a D. So, yeah.
Not good. Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing about the ratings that I find interesting is that you're, well, I mean, it's kind of like, are people, like, are they really trying to get their score up? Is it?
Yes.
And that's basically because you have the weight of, you have some voter weight behind you as well.
Yes.
And so it's like, you rub my back, I rub yours kind of thing.
And so what happens is we do the Liberty rating. In July, we have a Liberty dinner. And at Liberty dinner, we unveil the Liberty rating for the year. So I have with me 2024's Liberty rating here. This is the 2024. And what happens is at Liberty dinner, this will come out at the end of the dinner and we hand it out. And the reps are there, many of them, and they open it up to find out what was my score. How did I do? And I've had reps come to me, what do you mean I'm an A minus? What do you mean I'm only a B plus? And I'm like, well, you know, it's transparent. It is. We show you the bills. We showed how you're supposed to vote on it. Here's how you actually voted on it. Here are the bills you submitted. And we give the bills, when you submit bills to the State House to go through the legislative process, we started weighing those bills that you submit as a legislator to give you a quarter point if it's a pro-liberty bill. You get a quarter point if it gets through the House. You get a quarter point if it gets through the Senate. If it gets signed into law, you get a quarter point. And if you submit an anti-liberty bill, you lose all the points. Like, so it's a very complicated system we've got going on. And there are nuances, and we get down. So we do a legislator of the year every year, and we are down to decimal points to figure out who voted with us, who submitted the most Liberty bills, where are we at? And so our legislator of the year, it's a big title to win.
Who's the 2024?
2024 was Emily Phillips. I'll get her. It's right on the second page here. This is Emily Phillips was our legislator of the year.
Right. Yeah. And what, so tell me about Emily Phillips then. A rep is a part-time job here, right? Is it?
Yes. I mean,
it must be.
So the legislative season typically runs January to June. So, and then they do have to be at the State House from January to June. They're voting, they're serving on committees in the State House.
And they're not paid.
They're not paid.
How does that throws up an interesting problem, though. You probably get a lot of older retired people doing it.
We have a lot of older retired people in the State House. We have people that can do work from the State House that have jobs that are working remotely from the State House. We have people that are like single moms or not even single moms, just moms. It varies. The dynamics in that State House are very different, but it does tend to be older crowd.
Yeah, which will skew the political mm-hmm. slant. Mm-hmm. Arguably, they're more concerned about safety the older you get as well.
Right. Yeah, but a lot of them have lived here long enough to know that, you know, outlawing firearms or knives. We have, you know, in New Hampshire, all knives are legal. All of them for all legal purposes. So, I mean.
And what? So, tell me about Emily Phillips then. What's her normal job or what's her
I don't even know.
She looks young.
She is young. She's not a state rep anymore. So, she actually was in the House. This was last year. She was in the House. She was a state rep. She voted with us all the time. She's our A-plus legislator of the year. And then she decided to run for Senate. In the Senate, we had somebody in her town who said he was, Republican, but he did not vote with the gold standard. He was not a liberty legislator, let's say. And so she decided to primary him and try to get him out of the Senate so we could have her vote in the Senate versus in the House. And she lost.
I need you to explain the difference between the House and the Senate to me again. Yep. Is one of the more powerful than the other? Like, why would she want to give up something she had in?
So one's more powerful than the other, but in the Senate, we only have 24 representatives over there, right? We only have 24 senators. And what can happen over there, what has happened, is the Senate, it's a whole different beast unto itself. And we had one Liberty legislator over there. And so one of the things, the way we get our data is we do what's called, we ask them for roll call votes. So we want a roll call. When we ask for a roll call in the House, we get how every legislator voted on that particular bill. So if we have a bill on the gold standard, we're going to say, hey, our political director is a representative at the State House, Michael Granger. And we say, hey, Michael, call for a roll call on these votes, on these laws, on these RSAs. And so Michael will call for a roll call, and then we can find out, how did Emily vote on it? How did Michael vote on it? How did Tony vote on it? How did Tom Mannion vote on it? We call them out. In the Senate, they run it differently, and they can call for roll calls, but they have to have a second. There's a whole procedure that goes on, and there's some politics of politics happening in the Senate. And they don't call for roll calls nearly as much as what we can get in the House. And so, because when we have a lot of Liberty legislators in the House, any one of them will call for a roll call if we ask them to. But in the Senate, it's a much trickier thing. And so we're getting data from the Senate, but not nearly as much as we'd like, because they don't want to necessarily be held accountable to their votes. So they will vote down bills, and I don't know which legislators voted it down. And a lot of times in the Senate, they try to make it unanimous. And so it'll be all of them. And I don't understand. So Emily was running to go over there and try to fix that.
So, and for a bill to get passed, both Senate and the
Has to go through both houses.
And how many out of those 24 senators have to vote, have yes, for example? Is it like...
That's a great question. I'm not even sure myself. I'm trying to... It must be more than half, right?
But is it common for the Senate to have so many few people in it around different states?
So we've changed it. So now, well, I don't know about different states. Different states work very differently. I found that out. So we are very fortunate in New Hampshire. Our state system, the bills are out there for us to review very quickly, typically. This year it was a little slow, but they have what they call Gen Court Mobile, where I can go to my state house and see, just as a citizen of New Hampshire, all of the bills. You can go and look at them. You can read them. That's not the way it is in every state. Most states, it's not this transparent. And so in New Hampshire, we're very fortunate that we can. And that's, again, set up by those people that came long before us that set it up that way.
And it's, but in New Hampshire, it's more powerful to have a Senate seat than it is to have a...
Yeah.
And as far as representatives go, are they to do with geographical places? Representatives.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Only that. Yep. So like in Nashua, where we are.
Nashua. Yes.
How many representatives are there, for example?
I think it goes by our wards.
Right.
We have different wards.
And each one has one representative.
And I think we have 8 wards in Nashua. Yeah.
Now, explain the difference between, sorry about this.
I don't know if I'm going to know these answers, honestly.
I'm sure you will. But yeah. For example, right, I was talking a few days ago with someone about zoning and how everyone speaks like that, right, about zoning. Now, and they were saying, look, if you want to change zoning, you basically have to get your guys or girls on the local council. And that's who votes on zoning. That's different from representatives, right?
Correct. Yes.
Completely
yes.
different.
Yeah, that's a much more local type of thing, right? So the state is what we're looking at NHLA. The zoning board is typically fairly local.
And what about the federal part of this? Like, what's the connection between the federal part and the Senate and the representatives?
Zero.
Nothing at
so
all.
So this, we're talking about our state legislator, the state legislature, the state of New Hampshire. The federal stuff is completely different animal. We do have, you know, senators at the federal level. We do have representatives at the federal level, but it's not, the NHLA is not looking at them. We've kind of, personally, I guess, I feel like the federal government's off the chain. Maybe we're reining back in under Trump. I don't know what's going on. It's been crazy. But to me, the federal politics is just too, like you were saying, it's just too big a beast. It's just...
I suppose what I'm trying to understand is when people are passing bills in the state of New Hampshire, how much of that is funneling up to the federal level? Nothing.
Nothing.
So the federal level. So what is the federal level deciding, for example, about New Hampshire?
They send us money, right? So the federal government might say, well, we'll give you money for Medicaid expansion if you do XYZ. And so that's where NHLA will come in and be like, no, we don't want any more federal money. We don't want to take that. We don't want to be beholden to the federal government as little as possible. And so that's where the federal government will say, oh, we'll give you this, but you know, you got to give us that. It's kind of a, that's where the feds come in. And I mean, there's overall federal law, right? So there's federal laws that are overseeing our government, our state, but then there's state law as well. And so I'm just focused on the state law. Federal laws, above and beyond my scope.
Well, tax comes from the federal. Right. I mean, you hardly pay any tax here, do you?
Well, that's it. Well, in New Hampshire, we don't have a state income tax, but there is a federal tax. So yeah, we're paying in New Hampshire. We don't have to deal with the state forms, right? It cracks me up that people have to deal with that. And coming from New York, I did. And when we moved here, I was like, what do you mean I don't have to file a state income tax too? And you just don't have to do that.
And the only way to not pay federal income tax is to secede, right?
I suppose. I'm not sure how you don't.
Is there sort of talk of that here? I mean, of all the states, I would have thought it must be on people's minds.
Secession came up a couple years ago. It was a state thing where I think several of our legislators proposed secession of the New Hampshire state government, of New Hampshire, basically. It did not make it through. NHLA didn't take a stand on it.
Really?
Why not? It gets complicated. We didn't think it was necessarily infringing on our freedom. We didn't want to.
Isn't it? Yeah. What? Taxes? I mean, tax is theft, right?
Right. It is. No, right. I know.
Okay. The federal,
but
they're
there
the only
consequences to this, right? So when we looked at the cessation, you know, idea, I'm like, okay, what happens with Social Security? You know, now what happens with, you know, there's consequences to these things that you propose. And so to secede from the union is going to have consequences above and beyond what you're, you know, oh, no, it'll be fine. Oh, no, it'll be fine. No, you know, it may not be fine. The federal government might be pissed off that they're losing tax dollars necessarily from New Hampshire. They could come after us. What's your way of defending our borders? What are you, you know?
Three guns per person.
You know,
that's how you defend
right?
your borders.
More than three, but okay.
No, but seriously, I mean, if you really are into liberty,
right.
presumably, and obviously if you secede... Is it secede, isn't it?
Secede, yes. Yeah. Secession.
If you secede, then that's a short-term loss for a
right.
long-term gain, probably.
Yep.
You have to appreciate that.
Probably. Oh, I do. I'm not saying I'm not necessarily, personally wouldn't mind seceding, but I understand that there's consequences to the decisions that we're making. Every choice you make has a consequence. And so with the federal government, it is dicey. It is... And I'm not, I mean, we seceded from the UK, right? We did that as a country. We did that a long time ago.
Well, that worked out really well.
Yeah, well.
No, I think, well, I mean, you all drive big cars and you've got big houses.
It worked out just fine. But I think, you know, I think it wasn't necessarily the right time either. And I prefer to secede by, like, one of the things, like, the federal government, I think, wanted to be able to have the Border Patrol come to within 100 miles of New Hampshire, right? So the Canadian border is on New Hampshire's border, and the Border Patrol needs to be able to pull people over within 100 miles of that border. Well, that seems a little bit ridiculous. So the state of New Hampshire will pass laws to keep the feds out, right? Like, no, you can't come that far down. You can't be pulling over our citizens 100 miles into our border. That's almost, you know, a fourth of the state, you know, or whatever it is. So my thought is to repeal laws that get the federal government in here anyway. We can secede without having to actually piss them off. We can just keep them out. Don't take their money and pass laws that say, no, New Hampshire, right now there is an RSA to all guns made in New Hampshire, bought in New Hampshire, owned by New Hampshire citizens will not be under federal law, right? So they're trying to pass, I don't have the exact wording of that bill in my head, but they're trying to pass that so that if I make a gun in New Hampshire, it's owned in New Hampshire, federal law shouldn't apply.
I didn't realize they had so much power. So you can... For example, could New Hampshire State ban federal, the FBI, for example, from being able to operate in your state.
I think they could. Yes, they could propose that as a law. Yeah. You can propose anything.
Secession could just be a number of bills then. Right. It's not something you actually have to say, right, we're seceding by.
Right. You can just do it bit by bit, which is what I think, you know, that's how we've lost, you know, back to guns again, but we've lost a lot of gun rights over the years because we've seceded. They call it compromising, right? We're just going to take machine guns. Oh, now you just can't have bump stocks. Oh, now you just, but they never give us anything back, right?
That's a federal thing, is it?
No, that's at the state levels. A lot of places do that. Federal law, I guess.
That hasn't happened in New Hampshire. Right?
Federal law says you can't have a machine gun since 1986. They passed that.
Yeah. Right. But you could conceivably refuse that as a state.
If the machine gun was made, if we have this law passed, right, and you make a machine gun in New Hampshire, owned by a New Hampshire citizen, should be
and
fine.
You do actually have one of the biggest gun manufacturers here, don't you?
We have a couple. We've got Ruger, Sig Sauer. I think those are the two big ones that
Sig
come
Sauer.
To mind.
Sig Sauer, yeah, that's the one. Is that in Portsmouth?
Close to Portsmouth. I think it's Epping.
Right. Yeah. I think I saw the building when I was driving to Portsmouth yesterday. Yeah, I didn't realize there was so much. I know the federal system is supposed to work like that. That's how, you know, like the federated system is.
Well, I think originally the states were supposed to have more power than the federal government, right? Like, and I think that's how it's still kind of working, but I think we're losing our way in that. So it was the United States of America. So we're supposed to have a say, you know, over the way our state is run.
Which is what I believe, regardless of the US, mm-hmm. I believe personally that is the correct way to go. Devolution of power down to as smaller geographical region as right. possible. I think, and New Hampshire, yeah, you could imagine New Hampshire working quite nicely as a
it
country.
It does work quite nicely as a state. It's been working real for me and my family. It's been delightful. I love New Hampshire.
What are the only give me some downsides though, apart from zoning. Zoning sounds funny.
Downsides to New Hampshire.
There must be some things like you did tut when I said zoning. Zoning, yeah. to get it straight, zoning is. When the government or the local government decides that your land has to be, you have to do a certain thing with your land.
Right, so, you can only build within so many feet of your property line, and you can only dig so deep, and you can only build so high.
You have to have at least 2 acres on your property and stuff.
Right,
like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that gets a little burdensome, right? And that just actually happened. There was a case in Hudson recently where she won, but the individual... she had put a shed on her property in the town of Hudson, and it was the town of Hudson was saying, well, it's too close to the cemetery because the state says you have to be within, I think it's 15 feet, but the state RSA says that if a town already has its own zoning with regards to that, our rule doesn't apply. The RSA is for towns that don't have that. But this town of Hudson was saying, oh, no, we have to go by the state thing. So I got a call, and 5 reps went to that town meeting and explained to those people that, no, this person's okay. You had your rule trumps this one. This one only applies to towns that don't have a rule. You have a rule. She's followed your rule. It's fine. And the town, they did end up overturning it, and she was fine with her shed. But to go through all of that, it was just,
especially
you
just
know.
For a shed.
Yeah, just
but
for a shed.
And I would imagine as well then that the zoning committees, I can hear them, they're firing up the wave, aren't they?
Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah.
The zoning committees are probably quite old people, right?
I imagine it varies. I don't know every zoning committee, right? I can't possibly, but yes, I think it's,
I wonder if it's homeowners. People
who like power, right?
Well, so that's like homeowners associations. Yeah. That's what it makes me think of. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, this is the thing. I think we get people who want to dictate how other people live. Like in that same town, she was telling me that the planning board there, maybe it's the planning board, wants to have a rule where you have to have your lights turned off by 10 o'clock at night, all your outside lights, because, you know, light pollution, and it's upsetting our apple cart. And so now everybody's lights will be turned off at 10. That got voted down, but I'm sorry.
That's homeowners association-y, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah.
That, and unfortunately, like you say, they attract a certain type of person. And the older you get as well, the more likely you are to not want anything to change and things like that to happen. You know, if you're living a quiet life in rural New Hampshire, you don't want any change at all. You don't want anyone building anything anywhere near you.
Right.
So probably that stuff does get stuck in position, mm-hmm. you know, and I can sympathize with it. I live on a farm, and if someone wanted to build a big barn, mm-hmm. Opposite my view, I know that that's unreasonable of me to say, look, don't. But it is something that would piss me off, and mm-hmm. I might try and, you know, legislate. I don't know. Obviously, yeah. You wouldn't, but I don't know.
I would be upset. I wouldn't be happy. I can understand that. And at the same time, we're people. We need to be able to live our lives. And so you have to kind of recognize, well, maybe this will be a good neighbor. And maybe, you know, they're going to have a barn. Maybe there's going to be, you know, food produced that I'm going to like. So you have to kind of turn it around from, you know, the negative to I'll be a good neighbor. Maybe I'll get a good neighbor out of this and build my tribe. Because it is about tribe building. You know, as much as you're independent out in the rural places, you do still need one another.
I would hope that the neighbor might appreciate your request to site it somewhere else, unless there was an absolute reason why it had to be. Most people can put a barn wherever they want,
right?
On the whole,
you can, you know, work with them, yeah. You know, and I think you're more likely to get cooperation if you go over nicely versus and say, hey, you know, I live here, this is what I would like, you know, versus I'm on the board and I'm telling you no.
Yes, you know? Which would obviously be your stance, right? Well, that was a good lesson in federal things.
Hopefully,
and governments and stuff. No, I mean, it sounds, I don't need the exact.
Right. Well, I don't proclaim to be the most knowledgeable on all of that stuff, but I know a little.
I know, but why I think is important is because I don't know how much you know about the Free Cities Foundation that I work for.
I don't know that much about it.
Right. Yeah. Well, we just promote anywhere that's promoting individual liberties,
okay.
for people. But one of the guy that started the foundation, he proposes a model of governance, which is a private city. So the city runs as a city operator in a private sense. You sign a contract to live there. So you know what you know what all the rules are, but it requires independence from the host government, basically.
Sure, yeah.
And there are a couple of examples around the world that have started, and we could go, mm-hmm. no point in going into them. But when I look at the federal system that you have here, and in particular speaking to people from New Hampshire, you can see that this is another model which is trying to aim for the same kind of thing. You want very minimum government, and you want the private sector to solve all the problems of life.
Yes.
And and the only difference is in the free private city model, you basically sign a contract with the host. They're called the operator.
Okay.
And it says what all the rules are. So you can choose whether or not you want to live there. There's no social contract that you sign.
So
there's
what happens,
an actual contract.
But if somebody moves in who says, I agree to all these rules, but then they don't follow the rules,
they get kicked
what's
out.
The consequence?
Yeah, yeah, they get kicked out.
They get kicked out. But they've bought property here? So do they have to sell their property?
Well, that would be all written in the contract.
Okay.
And the point is, the system works when you have hundreds of competing cities,
where you want to be.
Exactly, which is where the model of the federal system is similar.
Yeah.
You know, you've got states that are competing for you now, and more recently, I think you've seen some of the left-leaning states go a bit crazy. Taxes and legislation and stuff. You see this movement of people. You can do it in your own country. I can't do that. Like, I live in a country that we have counties, which are like states, but moving over the border of the county means nothing. You know, okay. the government in London are the ones that make all the rules. Oh. We have very limited power in our local councils, especially okay. to do with tax and things like that. There's no such thing. Maybe so, but I like what's going on here because it's a living example of a group of people promoting individual liberty in a community and in an actual like a little small country,
right? Yeah, that's what we're trying. And my thing is, if you're not happy, you know, I understand people don't like the Free State Project. There are individuals, and my thought is, well, we've chosen this. You can move. Like, there's New York State, there's Maine, there's Vermont. Go find your tribe. Find it, because this tribe is not going anywhere. This is a great tribe. We're very happy here, and I do think the native live free or die speaks to it. It speaks to this movement.
Well, you were that anyway. Like I can, like the way you described it there, I could imagine, like I say, being pissed off if that I was a native, mm-hmm. and now all these people have come in here and they're taking over. But actually, you were a native anyway.
Not really. I moved here from New York.
But
before,
I mean, before yeah. all of them, yeah. we're all going to move here. So, yeah. I mean, what? But because natively. The state has a freedom bent anyway.
It really does. I mean, a lot of the natives that I have met who live here already, my neighbor across the street was born and raised here, and they're on board. They love it. They're just, they were natively into live free or die. And I know, and my children were born here. My oldest son, he said, I'll never leave New Hampshire. This speaks to me. I love that I have the freedom to do what I want, as, you know, within reason.
Within reason.
In some reason.
No, I mean, it is, you know, live free or die is no coincidence, obviously. What are the other states that are well known for things like that? A lot of the northern, the ones that border Canada, are they?
So Wyoming was another yes. choice, yeah. right? I've never been to Wyoming. I don't know that much about it. I think, like we were saying, I think the smaller states are more suited. Wyoming's much, much bigger. What I like about New Hampshire as well is, yes, we're constantly, NHLA is the watchdog, constantly fighting to keep New Hampshire as free as possible. That's our mission, right? And so if I need to go to the state house to testify on a bill, I can get there typically within an hour from most points in the state. In Wyoming, you can't. You're going to send an email. You're going to have to send a letter, maybe a phone call. But in the state of New Hampshire, because we're so tiny, most people can get to our state house to see their representatives in action within an hour, I would say. Maybe, you know, the northern part of the state, it's going to be a big haul. But other states don't have that. And so I do think that Wyoming would have been a poor choice just from the vastness of it. The, you know, getting to your state house in Wyoming, you're not going to be able to do it. And then having the 400 person representatives in the House, 24, it's very likely you can meet one of your representatives just out on the street multiple times. I will see their cars driving around. They have special license plates. And so, you know, you can look them up and say, oh, I know who that rep is. Oh, I know who that rep is.
I think it's just a good example of how it can work, and I think it for me at least it proves a number of things, like small is better, mm-hmm. you know, more intimate, more community based governance, that kind of stuff, and I can't wait to see what happens in the future. What's your prediction for, you know, the coming years, decades, I don't know.
Oof. I hope it continues. I'm terming out of being chair of NHLA. I'll be done the end of the board meeting in May. We'll need a new chair. And my conundrum this whole time has been, I love NHLA, but how do you ensure it stays a principled liberty organization, right? It can be co-opted. You can get people who don't know liberty on this board, and then it can completely change. And trying to ensure it stays the way it is and gets better over time is the conundrum. It's a puzzle I can't solve. I haven't solved it yet. And I don't think anybody has. Like, you know, I've read about people who, you know, they graduated from a university that they absolutely loved. They loved its politics. They loved its community. They loved everything about it. They donate all this money or they leave it to them. And then the university itself has turned completely around to the opposite of what that, you know, person who left them all that money wanted. And it's, I don't know how you ensure things over time. So I'm not good at making predictions. I don't want to make predictions. My hope would be that we just become more and more free, that, you know, we teach liberty and that liberty becomes this beacon of hope and that we are good neighbors and that we teach people that are afraid of liberty that it's okay, that, you know, being free, you'll be safe being free. You're going to be safer than hoping for a big government to come and save you, that when your community is with you, that's what you really should be about.
Okay, then answer this question. I think it might answer for us. Do you know of anyone who was liberty-minded who went over to the other side?
Yes.
Back? Oh, you do?
Yes.
Oh, okay, so it does happen.
It does happen.
And what was the reason behind that then?
I don't know well enough. I think there were relationships involved. And this person, I knew her. She was a state rep. She was a libertarian rep. And she, I don't know what happened, but that person is now completely not liberty. I don't think she's a rep anymore. I'd have to check, but she's not on board
That's
anymore.
Interesting,
and
isn't
I think
it?
There were like relationships, men involved that kind of co-opted her to a different mindset.
I mean, it's an interesting thought because I've always felt that the ideas of liberty were something that I ended up at after a very long journey, and it would be strange to then readopt something that I've been through already.
Yeah, and so some people have suggested that maybe this person was pretending to be liberty and never really was. And then they just kind of showed their true colors afterwards. You don't
know.
But
they're a minority, though, would you say?
I would say that's a minority.
Right. So theoretically, over the next 50 years, the numbers should just go up.
I would hope. I would think that people will see the light of liberty and be drawn to it. Sitting where we sit, right? I'm always aware of the echo chamber, right? We're sitting here, we're talking, oh, of course liberty, but there are people who cannot see it for whatever reason. And it concerns me that, you know, they don't see it. And I don't know how to make them see the light. I can't, you have to find it, you're on your own journey. You have to find it in your time when you're ready for it. I think that's a big part of it.
Well, like we were saying earlier, I think it's actually a personality type. And I'm I'm not so sure that it's more than, I don't know, 25% of the world.
Well,
possibly. I don't really know, but I know that it's a harder choice in many cases.
Well, are you aware of the R versus K theory? Have you heard of R versus K?
Don't think so. Sounds good.
So R versus K is almost like there's two different species on the planet, and the R's and the K's, right? And the R's tend to be more like rabbits on the planet. You know, there's always plenty of resources available, need to breed a lot, it's fine, everything's going to be okay, a little bit, you know, it'll be fine. And the K's are more like wolves, like they're looking and saying, look, there are threats out here, let's watch our, you know, numbers of children, the resources are limited, we're going to focus on this. And so I do think there might even be, this is going to make me sound a little bit crazy, but like two kinds of species on the planet. And there are those that just are more like, it'll be fine, and they're not necessarily liberty minded. I do think the people who are more like K's, who are like more wolf-like, are looking like, no, there are threats out here. We need to be aware. We need to, you know, watch our resources. We need to watch our spending. We need to, you know, put our efforts into things that matter. I think that could be a big deal. And so and what I think happens over time is the R's maybe make a lot of people, and then we, you know, but then something happens where there is a natural disaster, or there's something horrible, and then the K's are there
to
say, okay, here we are.
Well, the K's theoretically eat the R's, don't they?
Sometimes. They're the ones that are armed.
I think my theory would be...
Oh, man, I'm looking like a crazy person.
It wouldn't be rabbits and wolves. It would be, I think, you know, we spoke about this earlier. Mm-hmm. I think it just comes down to, like, how vigorous are you? Like how good at competing are you? And how in all mm-hmm. walks of life, in society, in economics, in physically, all these kind of things. Because if you're if you're competitive, you tend to fall on that sort of freedom side. Because you think, I can look after myself, I don't need
anything. Right, you can be independent, you can do more.
So I don't think there's anything wrong with not being liberty-minded, because a lot of people are weakened, a lot of people are, for whatever reason, yes. And do need protecting, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely,
et cetera.
Yep.
But, it's not me. That's not my, and I think even when I'm an old man, I'm still not going to be me, even when I'm not as competitive. But anyway.
I just like the opportunity to try, right? Like, even if I'm not competitive, I'm not necessarily the most strong, the smartest girl in the room. I'm not, but I want to play. I want to try. I'm not opposed to falling down and getting back up, I guess. I think it's kind of comes down to that core thing of being the person who's willing to put yourself out there, and maybe you fall down, but you get back up again and you just keep going, versus, people who are afraid to even throw their hat in the ring.
Well, which is, I think, a function of happiness. And I think the best way to describe it is in the caged lion meme, Would you rather be a lion safe in a cage being fed food, or would you rather be a lion out on the plains?
Out
competing
on the plains.
Yeah. And having to compete for food, right. And potentially in harmful situations. And and I think that goes right down to the core of us. I think some people are happy to sit in a cage when everything's catered for them, and that's fine. Yeah. But I'm not sure I'll ever be that guy. My kids aren't those guys either. It's in our DNA.
To me, it would be a boring life. Right? Like, I just want to do what I can do. I want to try things. I want to be out there. Being in the cage, there is the safety of it, right? I guess that's appealing to many people, and I don't quite understand that. I don't.
No, me neither. Well, anyway, Melissa, thanks for bringing me to the tropics. I've stopped sweating, at least.
Yeah, the temperature has come down.
People have started surfing. So, it's really nice talking to you. And I think that's a great initiative. And long may it get better and better and better. And hey, 50%, maybe you get 200 legislators. That'd be incredible.
I think that would be my big goal, my big dream, is that we get 200 or more Liberty legislators in that state house. So nhliberty.org is our website if anybody's interested to look up that.
Sure. Yeah. And wonderful. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. This was awesome.